The condensation on the glass of the front display is the only thing moving in the store. It's a single heavy bead of water, tracking a slow, jagged line through the reflected neon of the open sign. Outside, the streetlights are humming, a low-frequency buzz that vibrates in the soles of my feet. The air inside the boutique smells of expensive cedar and the metallic tang of a brand new security system. My hand is resting on the velvet sleeve of a blazer that costs more than my first car. The fabric is cool, unnaturally smooth. The deadbolt on the front door doesn't click. It thuds, a heavy muffled sound that suggests the door is thicker than it looks. Behind the counter, the receipt printer spits out a long white tongue of paper, the mechanical screech of the gears cutting through the silence of the empty showroom. I told myself the money was clean. It came from a man who once shared my bed, a man who knew exactly how many hours I spent sketching these silhouettes on the backs of napkins when we were 22. Marcus didn't just hand over a check. He handed over a rescue. He called it an investment in my genius, a way to rectify the years I spent working for people who couldn't see the architecture in my tailoring. He said he wanted to be the wind beneath me, the silent partner who simply enjoyed the view of my ascent. And for the first 6 months, he was. He was a ghost in the ledger, a series of wire transfers that turned a derelict warehouse space into a temple of minimalist luxury. I was the face, the talent, the success story. He was just the signature on the lease. Then came Julian. Julian didn't have Marcus's weight, but he had a way of looking at a garment and seeing the person inside it. He was the first floor manager I hired who didn't look at me as a boss to be managed, but as an artist to be protected. He brought me coffee that was actually hot. He reminded me to eat. He touched my shoulder once, just once, to steer me away from a loose floorboard, and the gesture was so devoid of ownership that it made me realize how long I had been starved for a touch that didn't come with a bill of sale. The first time Marcus noticed Julian was during the trunk show. Marcus was standing in the corner, leaning against the marble pillar, a glass of sparkling water in his hand. He wasn't talking to the investors. He wasn't looking at the clothes. He was watching the way Julian adjusted the collar of my shirt. He was watching the way I laughed. The next morning, the silent partner found his voice. It started with a memo about payroll optimization, a suggestion that we were top-heavy in management, a concern about the cultural fit of the new hires. I'm looking at the termination papers on my desk now. They aren't signed by me, but they don't need to be. The operating agreement, the one I signed in a haze of gratitude and champagne 3 years ago, gives the majority stakeholder final say over personnel decisions impacting brand integrity. Marcus is sitting in the chair across from me. He hasn't moved for 20 minutes. He's just watching me read. He's wearing a suit I designed for him, a charcoal wool that absorbs the light around him. He looks like a shadow that has finally decided to take up space. He tells me that he's doing this for the boutique. He says that Julian was a distraction, a parasite feeding off the momentum we built together. He uses the word we like a prayer and a threat. He points out that the quarterly projections are up 12% since he started taking a more active role in the daily operations. He mentions the new location in Soho, the one he just secured the deposit for this morning. It's a beautiful space, he says, 3 times the square footage, a legacy. He asks me if I really want to throw away a legacy for a man who doesn't even know how to properly steam a silk blend. The secret is that I like the Soho space. I've already seen the blueprints. I've already imagined the way the morning light will hit the racks. I've already decided where the mirrors will go. That's the hunger. It's not for the money. Not exactly. It's for the proof that I exist at this level. Marcus knows this. He fed that hunger until it became a beast that only he could afford to keep. He made me a queen, but he built the castle out of glass and kept the only key to the front door. I look at the smudge on the glass of my office door. It's a thumbprint, probably Julian's from when he brought in the mail this morning. It's a tiny, oily mark of a human being who is about to be erased from my life. I could say no. I could walk out. I could take my sketches and my talent and start over in a basement apartment with a single sewing machine. I could be free. But the cost of that freedom is the Soho lease. The cost is the reputation I've spent a decade building. The cost is the humiliation of failing publicly, while Marcus watches from his marble pillar. He gets up and walks over to me. He doesn't touch me. He doesn't have to. He just stands close enough that I can smell his cologne, the one I picked out for him 5 years ago. He tells me that he's arranged a car to take me to the new site. He says we should celebrate the expansion. He says that he's already handled the Julian situation and that the severance package was more than generous. He calls it a clean break. He says that now, finally, there's no one left to get in our way. I feel the weight of the pen in my hand. It's a heavy gold-plated thing he gave me when we opened this location. It feels like a lid pipe. I look at the line where my signature should be. If I sign this, Julian is gone. If I sign this, the person who made me feel like a human being instead of a brand is deleted. But if I sign this, the Soho store is mine. The legacy is mine. I look at Marcus. He's smiling, but it's the smile of a man who has just finished a very long, very patient hunt. He tells me that I'm the most talented person he's ever known. He says he's the only one who truly understands the sacrifices required for greatness. He says he's proud of me. He says he loves what we've become. I think about the exit. I think about the street outside, the cold air, the independence of a life without his shadow. I imagine myself walking out the door and never looking back. But then I look at the velvet on the blazer. I look at the marble. I look at the future he's holding out like a piece of raw meat. The exit isn't an exit. It's just a different kind of cage, one where I'm starving and forgotten. This cage is warm. This cage has lighting that makes me look beautiful. I press the pen to the paper. The ink flows easily, a dark permanent line that seals the deal. I don't look up when I hear the door to the workroom close. I don't look up when I hear the sound of Julian's locker being emptied. I just watch the ink dry. Marcus puts his hand on the back of my chair, a light, proprietary touch that claims the furniture and the woman sitting in it. He tells me he's glad I've seen reason. He says he knew I was a partner. The silence in the boutique is absolute now. The humming of the streetlights has faded into the background, a white noise that I've learned to ignore. The bead of condensation on the front window has finally reached the bottom of the glass, leaving a faint, distorted trail behind it. I stand up and smooth out the wrinkles in my skirt. I pick up my bag. I walk toward the door, and Marcus holds it open for me. He's being helpful. He's being a gentleman. He's being the man who made it all possible. As we walk to the car, I realize that I don't remember what Julian's voice sounds like. It's only been 20 minutes, and already the memory is being crowded out by floor plans and fabric swatches and the sheer overwhelming weight of Marcus's presence. He opens the car door for me, and for a split second, I hesitate. The street is empty. I could run. I could scream. I could set it all on fire. But then I think of the Soho windows, the way they'll look at night, the way the world will see me. I get into the car. The leather is soft. The air conditioning is perfect. Marcus slides in beside me and tells the driver to head downtown. He takes my hand in his, and his grip is firm, steady, and impossible to break. He tells me that tomorrow is going to be a big day. He tells me that we have so much work to do. He tells me that he's never going to let anything come between us again. And I believe him. That's the horror of it. I believe him because I've decided that the price of his protection is a price I'm willing to pay, over and over again, until there's nothing left of me but the clothes I wear and the man who bought them for me. I watch the boutique disappear in the rearview mirror, a small lit-up box in the middle of a dark city, and I realize that the only person who was ever truly trapped in that room was the woman who thought she was the owner. The car moves smoothly through the intersections, the green lights appearing one after another, as if Marcus has timed the very heartbeat of the city to suit our transit. He's talking about the opening gala, the list of names he's already vetted, the specific vintage of wine that will be served. He's building the world around me, brick by expensive brick, and with every word, the walls get a little higher, the air a little thinner. He mentions a new designer he wants me to collaborate with, someone he's invested in, and I realize the cycle is starting again. Another person to be brought into the fold, another talent to be managed, another life to be refined until it fits his specific narrow vision of success. I look out the window at the people walking on the sidewalk. They look small. They look cold. They look like they have nothing. I tell myself that I am lucky. I tell myself that I have won. I tell myself that Julian was just a floor manager, a replaceable part in a machine that is finally running at full capacity. I say these things in my head until they start to sound like the truth. Marcus squeezes my hand. He asks me what I'm thinking about. He says he can always tell when I'm designing in my head. He says he loves that about me, that I'm always looking forward, always striving for the next thing. He says he's so glad we're on the same page. I look at him, and for the first time, I don't see the man I used to love. I see a mirror. I see the person I've become to survive him. I see the ambition that he's twisted into a leash. I smile at him, a perfect, practiced expression that I know he likes. I tell him I'm thinking about the windows in Soho. I tell him I want them to be grand. I tell him I want them to be impossible to ignore. He nods, satisfied. He leans back into the leather upholstery, the king of a kingdom that exists only because I've agreed to live in it. The car turns the corner, and the light from a passing bus flashes across the interior, illuminating the gold pen in my purse, the termination papers on the desk back at the store, and the thumbprint on the glass that is already evaporating into nothing. I am the boutique owner. I am the success story. I am the woman who has everything. And as the car speeds toward the dark heart of the city, I realize that the most successful thing Marcus ever invested in wasn't the store, or the clothes, or the brand. It was the way I've learned to love the weight of the thumb on my neck. It was the way I've learned to call it support. It was the way I've learned to be quiet. The silence in the car is different now. It's not the silence of peace, it's the silence of a vacuum. It's the sound of all the air being sucked out of a room until only the two of us are left, breathing the same recycled air, moving toward a future that was written for me before I even knew the plot. I close my eyes and listen to the hum of the engine, the steady rhythmic pulse of a machine that never stops, never tires, and never, ever lets go.